Chapter 17. Bet. I can't stop looking at the snow falling outside the windows. There's a kind of perfect symmetry to the first snowfall, coming in the first week of December, on the first night of dress rehearsal. I had a pill just an hour ago, so my focus is intensely directed wherever I decide to put it, which right now is on the tiny white glimmers of hope whirling outside the massive picture windows in the Koch Theater lobby. Guests drift by, and I feel their curious eyes on me, wondering what one of the dancers is doing out here instead of getting ready. Everyone else is backstage, but they're not missing me. Besides, Mr. K isn't even here yet, so there's no rush. No need to give in to the anxious flutters flooding my system. No need to fan the fire by forcing myself to stay in the totally cramped dressing rooms. I used to love dancing at Lincoln Center, but Alec has kind of ruined it for me. Usually, he'd be out here with me, or we'd be holed up in a dark corner exchanging back rubs and ballet gossip. Alec can gossip with the best of them, and always has the juiciest news from the trustees and teachers. When Mr. K's divorce went viral a few years ago, he was the first to know, which meant I, of course, was second. No sign of Alec today. He really hit the off switch this time. Avoids my texts, calls, nudges on social media. I faked sick and avoided the Lucas family's annual Thanksgiving Day dinner at his Hamptons house, even though my drunk and pissy mother almost had a heart attack about it because we had to have dinner at home for once. Will was all too happy to blast pictures of himself waiting for the jitney to head out there. I try not to think about it as I use the windowsill as a makeshift bar, extending my leg, pressing my nose to my knee. Passersby wrapped in scarves and puffy coats and knee-high boots barely glance in, uninterested. I can't compete with the magic of the flurry of a first snow, even in my full Snow Queen regalia. I check my cell for the millionth time, thinking maybe Alec will text something other than good luck tonight. Something more like, I miss you. I made a mistake. I should have never broken up with you. I toss my cell phone into my bag, not caring if the screen breaks. There's nothing from Adele either. She's on a plane headed to Berlin for a dance gala exhibition. My mother hasn't even called to wish me good luck. She said, over Thanksgiving dinner, there's no point in getting all excited about something that doesn't really matter. Then she asked Adele to pass the sweet potatoes. Adele had a pained look on her face the whole time and kept apologizing for my mother, which only made it feel worse. Not to mention, I can still feel those sweet potatoes on my hips. I ask my mother not to make them every year, but every year she still does because Alec's little sister, Sophie, loves them, and I have no control over the deliciousness of maple syrup and marshmallows masking the actual taste of vegetables. I have so little sugar otherwise. Just the look of the casserole beckons me. That autumn orange color, the sweet swirls of mush drooping from the barely there burned clouds of marshmallows. I shiver, running my hands over my hips, my thighs, imagining the sugar attaching itself to me just because I dared to delight in the memory of that airy, sweet succulence. I want to take another pill, will away the thoughts, but I took the last of them earlier. Digging in my bag, I pull out my phone again. Still nothing from Alec. I text my dealer. Really, he's not mine, but rather this guy who lives in the neighborhood and makes a killing off desperate ballerinas. I know I should stop. I've seen it all before. Too much time hanging around the company dancers' apartments with Adele, watching them balance all the stress and pressure with a mix of cigarettes, pills, diets, pain meds, and tiny salads. But I need this right now. I ask him for more Adderall and to surprise me with something a little stronger. He likes the flirty subtext of my message, and I know he'll give me a few things for free. After the dealer distraction, I can't help but give in and text Alec. I miss you. Then, of course, I can't take my eyes from my cell phone. I do half-hearted pliés and can just make out my reflection in the window, wrapped in white and silver. He'd still think I was beautiful, I think. Maybe. My phone dings in response. "You'll do great, B," he texts. Not enough to give me hope exactly, but more than enough to make me want him immediately. "Can we talk?" I type in quickly, before I have a chance to worry about it sounding needy. There's no response. My heart turns into a brick and drops to the floor. Every other December dress rehearsal since we were little, Alec has shown up with a bouquet of paper roses and a kiss. Even when he was too little to know how good it made me feel, he'd put a hand on each of my cheeks and hold my face before going in for that first dress rehearsal kiss. Even at 12, the guy knew what he was doing. The little snow flurries have escalated, and the wind has picked up, so there's nothing outside now but a wash of white. It's time to go backstage. It's time to care about the performance. It's time to prepare myself to dance with Henri. The calm of the lobby is in complete contrast with the chaos of backstage. Stick figure girls move at fast-forward speed, twisting their hair into buns, layering on stage makeup, doing contained versions of their choreography, marking the steps with little hops and hand flutters and complicated feet movements that take up only a few square inches of space. The smell of rosin and hairspray and stage makeup wafts through the air, the scent of ballet. I swallow and walk to one of the mirrors. I don't ask for permission, don't say, "Excuse me," or even put a hand on any of the other dancers, asking them to move aside. I just keep my head high and my gaze focused on the spot at the mirror that I have deemed my own, and take slow steps with the confidence that they will all part and make room for me. Which they do. It's all I have left. The ability to make them move for me. The illusion of power. Shaking hands, apply lipstick, silver shadow, silver eyeliner, midnight black mascara. They are so out of my control, they can't possibly be mine. I practically blind myself with a liner, an impossible feat, since I've been putting on my own eyeliner before dress rehearsals and performances since I was 8, when Adele taught me to keep my lips parted and my eyes pointed skyward. "You look amazing," one of the core members says in a small voice, like she's been planning out that sorry sentence for hours. "We all need to look amazing," I say. "Mr. K expects nothing less." I used to do this a lot last year. Talk about Mr. K with authority, report back on little things he'd said or done. It was easy last year. Mr. K and I spent so much time together that I could always pull out some saying of his, or remind the girls of his vision for the ballet. I knew about their costumes before they did. I had insider information, and would pull back the curtain to show them just an edge of each little secret. Enough to keep them on their toes, enough to keep them in awe. I'm trying to do it again today, but the most personal interaction I've had with Mr. K lately was him telling me I needed to work harder. Still, these girls don't know the difference. They all nod their heads as if I'm the Messiah, delivering a message from the ballet god. Like I really am the Snow Queen, emerging from the mini blizzard outside to deliver messages of their fates. I take a huge breath, and my hand stills so I can get mascara all the way from the base of my lashes to the white blonde tips without a hitch. The shakiness is slipping away, finally. Until I hear the music box sound of Gigi's giggles. "Alec!" Her voice pokes out from the cloud of laughter. An airy sigh floats behind it, the hard edges of his name all smoothed out. And I can't stop myself from whipping around to find the source of the sound, or from making a strained animal noise when I finally do see them. Gigi's leaning against the wall directly outside the mirrored dressing room, and Alec is holding her foot like it's something that could break, something that's fragile. something that could give way to blood and weakness and pain at any minute. One hand cups that tiny, ready-to-break foot, and the other is on her thigh, pushing her whole leg so that it's parallel with the rest of her body. His body comes in close to hers, and he's got his patented Alex smile on his face. Doesn't break eye contact, even as her eyes dart all over, even as her giggles come out in eager little bursts. He stays steady and strong. I know this side of him well. My anxiety deepens. Gigi is in the costume that should have been mine. Plum and gold and intricately beaded. The guy that should be mine is breathing on her neck. The pre-rehearsal moments that should have been mine, stolen and on display in front of me, in front of everyone. His Nutcracker Prince jacket is open, and I see his bare chest. She touches it playfully, like she's done it 1,000 times before. My muscles feel cold. My feet feel like they're falling asleep, and I can feel the extra Thanksgiving weight on me as surely as I could feel the weight of soaking wet jeans. The only cure, the only thing I can think of to help me calm down and get back into my body enough to dance the Snow Queen and make them all fall in love with me again, is to have Alec hold me and whisper to me and treat me the way he used to. And it will happen. As far as I'm concerned, we're getting back together. One last look in the mirror reveals at least my costume is beautiful and my skin shimmering with pixie dust. I look regal, even if I don't feel that way. I can do this. I walk away from the mirror and over to Alec. I stand close, making sure my bare skin is against his, our arms touching. He moves away, so there's a breath of air between us, and I shift my weight immediately so that there isn't. "Hey there," I say, trying to give some of that soft, Gigi-like air in my voice, too, but it comes out flat and hoarse. I should stick to what I know. "Hey," he says, smiling enough so that his dimples show, but not so much that I believe him. He's still holding her leg, even though I'm there, like he doesn't care that I'm standing here. "Can we go for a quick walk?" I say. "I mean, can we go to the lobby? Can we steal a kiss? Can you watch the snow fall with me and tell me I'll be magical on that stage? Would that be okay with you, Gigi? If I steal your partner? It's just that we have a ritual we've been doing forever." Gigi blushes and makes about 1,000 different little gestures. A shrug, a hand wave, a tremble. It's infuriatingly adorable. "I can't right now, okay?" Alec says, placing Gigi's foot back on the floor. His hand lingers too long on her calf, and he doesn't straighten up as quickly as I know he could. She gets all quiet. "After?" I say. There are girls who would give up now. He just said he couldn't, meaning he doesn't want to be with me after all. He's broken up with me, and he's drooling over the new girl, making sure some part of his body is in constant contact with some part of hers. "I don't care. She's nothing. A silly virgin. A passing fancy. I'm not letting us evaporate like some puddle, some accident. We're getting back together." "Sure, maybe," he mumbles. It is the first time I have ever heard Alec mumble. His mouth is practically closing in on the word. That's how small the noise is. "I need to go focus," he continues, a little louder, but still not his true voice. "Focus before we start, okay?" I don't know whose permission he's asking, but I doubt it's mine. Gigi blushes. Anger stirs itself into my anxiety, and my whole body is buzzing with way too many feelings. I will not be able to dance if I can't get myself back under control. The Snow Queen would never have trembling legs or boiling blood. And when Alex slips away without another word, I feel the urge to cry moving from my ribcage to my throat and into my sinuses, like a foreign thing attacking me. Stage fright? Gigi says, like she's had it too, which I cannot imagine. She is not the kind of girl who scares easily, if this semester at school is any indication. It doesn't seem like anything that happened to her has had any effect. Not usually, I say. Well, you look beautiful. That shuts me up. Not because no one has called me beautiful before, and not because I don't feel beautiful. There are white feathers in my hair, and white tulle haloing my waist, and so much makeup around my eyes that they have nearly doubled in size. But the way Gigi says it, so simple and bare, I have never heard anyone say something and know how much they believe it to be true. Gigi hasn't put on her makeup yet, so her light brown face is still naked too, like her voice. And for a horrible instant, I think, yes, I can see why Alec is choosing her. But he can't. Not ever. Please, no, I can't let him go. I won't. They did a wonderful job with your costume, too, I say. It is as close to a compliment as she's going to get from me. Thank you, she says, beaming. Her eyes are expectant, like our conversation could continue, when I want nothing more than for it to end. I don't get her. Why doesn't she bring up the lipstick on the mirror or the photo I left in the light closet? She has to know it was me. Other girls have been whispering about it. If I were her, I'd bring it up. And I kind of want her to, just so I can be mean and make her look crazy and accusatory. But no one dares mess with me. Just so you know, Alec and I aren't really over, I say. If I'd thought it through more, I would have said something smaller, scarier, more threatening but less clear. Something like what my mother would have said. I scold myself in my head for being an amateur all of a sudden. This is like our pattern, so don't get too excited about being with him. Her pretty mouth curves into an O. She starts to say something, but I try making a cool, clean escape. Except when I step backward, I run right into another bony body. Eleanor. But not just Eleanor. Not Eleanor outfitted as my understudy or going invisible in her core costume. No. This is Eleanor with a small, elegant gold headdress and a taut golden bear belly. Long, sheer harem pants. Small gold top. Eleanor has transformed into Arabian coffee. And she's grinning. Girls and boys peek out of the dressing rooms and look up from their warm-ups. All eyes on Eleanor and her exposed ribcage and the prettiness none of us ever knew she possessed. They shout out congratulations. Why are you in that costume? I say. I'm taking over, Eleanor says through her smile. So full of joy, I think she is just as close to breaking as I am, just on the opposite side of things. They gave it to you? I say, not meaning to sound so harsh. My words hang in the air for a moment over all of us, and there's shock all around. Her forehead wrinkles with hurt. Congrats, Gigi says. You so deserve this. I hope Liz gets better, though. On her brown face is the perfect balance of concern for Liz and support for Eleanor. It's impossible how good she is. Too good. She goes in to hug Eleanor, and I beat her to it, pulling Eleanor close and away from her. I am proud to feel a surge of actual happiness for Eleanor. I squeeze her arms tight. Look at you, I say into her ear, and I can feel her heart beating at a rapid pace through her skimpy costume. I hold on tight, the one person who loves me no matter what. When did this happen? I whisper. A private audition with Mr. K. She whispers so fast I can barely register it. And she doesn't hug me back as tightly, quickly slipping from my arms and into Gigi's arms. They jump and giggle and whisper something I can't quite hear. It's clear that this isn't the first time they've laughed together like that. like friends. And just like that, I've lost everything.
Chapter 18, June. The news doesn't feel real, just like the kiss with Jaehee didn't feel real. I have to ask Morky to repeat herself, which is embarrassing. It's 9 a.m. and we're in Studio C. Most people are sleeping in, trying to get every last minute of rest before opening night.
"Do you want to dance?"
she says.
"Then show me you know it."
Victor plays the music for the Harlequin doll. My feet whisper along the floor as I take my place in the center of the room. I keep my head bowed. 8 hours before opening night, and I'm at school in the studio with Morky, Dubrava, and Mr. K. They're standing along the mirrors, waiting for me to show them if I know the choreography. There are three other girls here, two other level 7 girls, and one level 8. I step into the dance. I will show them that I know all the steps. I spend hours studying every role in every major classical ballet. I've seen the Nutcracker performed live every Christmas since I was little enough to remember it. I've memorized every girl's role, and could probably dance the boys too. I try to be delicate and light, an embodiment of all that's great in the Nutcracker's land of sweets. I try to picture my mom right in front of me, watching and seeing me nail it. I try to hear the applause in my head. I try to remember how it felt when Morky praised me weeks ago for my pirouettes. I finish. I don't dare move out of the bow. Mr. Kane nods.
"Well done, Butterfly. I've never seen you move like that before. You've been working hard."
"Yes," I acknowledge.
"You dance like you really want it. Like you know," he says, doing a circle around me. "In Russia, being a dancer gives you a place in history. A life more intense and special than the others. It sets you apart from the rest of the world. I feel that in you."
A bright blush creeps up my neck. He says something in Russian to Morky, who nods at me too. They're starting to see me, really see how hard I work, how much I want this. He doesn't let any of the other girls dance. The Harlequin doll is mine. A soloist role. He trusts me enough to get it ready and perfected in just 8 hours. I wonder if this has ever happened before. I wonder if I'm finally special to him. The news spreads. The cast, timing, and music are all adjusted. After spending hours in the studio and skipping lunch, I have my new Nutcracker costume fitting. I go to the third floor and wait outside Madame Matvienko's costume room with the other girls in her black leotards and white practice tutus. I sip my Omija tea to keep my stomach calm. I will be fitted for 3 costumes. The Sugar Plum Fairy one, just in case Gigi doesn't dance for some reason that'll never happen. My plain pink core one for the Waltz of the Flowers ensemble dance, and the bodysuit for the Harlequin doll. Across from me, Gigi hums, and I glance up from my place on the floor to shoot her an evil look, implying that she should be quiet. She stretches flat along the floor like a pancake. Alex's loud voice escapes the costume room, and each time it rings out, Gigi gazes at the door like a puppy. She doesn't even hide it. Pathetic. I guess they're really together now, even though she's been babbling to me about how he hasn't asked her. So she can't be sure. What she should be sure of is that if Bette didn't hate her before, she definitely does now. Bette marches into the area.
"They're not done yet?"
she asks, waiting for someone to answer her. One of the younger girls chimes in, saying the boys are running late, her eagerness to please Bette written all over her face. Bette pops a piece of fruit in her mouth.
"How's everything, Gigi?"
she asks.
"You feeling okay?"
"I'm fine," Gigi replies curtly. "I'm not sick." Her voice lands hard on the word sick, like it's the last word on earth she'd ever want to use. Her eyes narrow and she eyes Bet suspiciously.
Why are you asking?
Well, Mr. K wanted me to check in on you. I am one of the girls that's been here the longest.
I just wanted to follow up with you about things. I probably should have checked on you a while ago, been busy and all. We really don't tolerate bullying here. There haven't been any other incidents, right?
Gigi doesn't look up from the floor, like she's trying really hard to focus on her stretching. I squirm a little thinking about how I added to it. I wonder if Bet's seen that medical report. I wonder if Gigi has too. I feel a pinch of regret, but only for a minute. I try not to think of Cassie either. Things were at their worst with her.
I'm fine, Bet, she says, as gracious as ever. Thanks, though.
Bet bats her eyelashes over her blue eyes and adds a little giggle, then continues.
Let me know if anything else happens, okay? I'm here for you.
Before Gigi can respond, we're called into the costume room. It's full of light and perfume and the smell of makeup. We only get to be here twice a year, and the costumes we need are brought over from the company's storage. I savor every moment. Tiaras line one table, while costume ornaments and handmade point shoes and ballet slippers sit primly on another. Little pink layers piled one on top of the other like miniature cakes. Once we all settle in, the mood is airy. Here we're just girls playing dress-up, the best part of ballet. The volunteer mothers bring around our costumes. During dress rehearsal, some costumes needed readjusting and one final check. Gigi and I stand together as ours is presented. A rich plum costume drapes down from a wooden hanger, jewels stitched along the bodice. My fingers graze the fabric just as Gigi's do too, and we admire it, both wanting to wear it forever.
You'll be gorgeous in this,
the mother says to Gigi. She doesn't even look at me, like I don't even have a chance of wearing this costume. She knows all too well how the ballet world works. I don't let it pinch. The woman helps Gigi change into the tiny costume, and it squeezes her ribcage snugly, clearly needing to be let out a little. I hide my smile, knowing it never need to be let out for me. I put on my core costume, a pink, frilly, knee-length outfit worn by all the girls who will play flowers in the group dance. It itches.
Put this hairnet on!
One of the mothers hands it to me. I pull it over my bun and head, then go to the wig area. They fit me in a white wig that smells like baby powder and mothballs, and looks like it should be atop the head of some 17th century judge. I see other core members reflected in the room of mirrors. We are all the same girl. I change out of that costume and into the checkered bodysuit costume for the Harlequin doll. Black and white diamonds cover my whole body, and a white neck piece that reminds me of a coffee filter is fanned around my throat. There's a gold keyhole in the back where I'll be wound up on stage like the tiny dancer in my music box.
Ijeon Kim,
Madame Matvienko shouts my name from the front of the room, and I realize by her frown that she's called my name more than once. I approach, head down, and curtsy to her. She's just as important as the other Russian teachers here, even though she's only the costume mistress.
Turn,
she says without emotion, her face cold and wrinkled, her hair cropped close around her head, her lips frowned up and pursing like she's an angry fish. She leans forward in her chair and slides a measuring tape around my waist. I fight the urge to look down and see the number. Instead, I focus on holding my breath. I feel big, as if the tape measure has to stretch. She places pins in my waist and stands to adjust the old wig on my head.
Wig too big,
she says, removing it and placing another one on top.
But costume fit just right.
She pats my side and I release.
You look so much like your mother,
but your body reminds me of your father, she says. So narrow, so tall, such a tiny head on top of it all. Just like him.
I'm sorry? I say, barely able to get the word out. It must be a mistake. She must be confusing me with Sejin or one of the other Korean girls. I know they think we all look alike.
Tiny head. All of his children. Very funny. Such a tiny head for such a powerful man, no?
Madame Matvienko finally looks at my face and notices, mid-laugh, that my jaw has dropped,
that my cold, clammy skin is as pale as I've always wanted to be. My legs shake so badly, I have to sit down.
Who are you talking about?
I manage to say, in a voice so much higher than my own that I swear it didn't come out of me at all. Madame Matvienko is the one turning white now, then red, then almost green with what I assume is the nausea of saying something dangerous and wrong.
I'm confused. I thought you were one of the others, but of course not. You're Ijeon, Ijeon Kim. You look so much like the other Asian girls. All of your tiny waists and pretty hair, all the same. Excuse me.
She tries to smile and pass it off as an honest, ignorant, racist mistake. But I get the distinct and terrifying feeling that there was no error. Madame Matvienko knows who my father is. Maybe they all do. I get so dizzy I have to sit down on one of the crappy metal folding chairs. Every part of me is instantly drenched in sweat, and I can't muster up a single word. The thing I've wanted to know all my life. The answers might be right here.
Chapter 19. Gigi. My bobby pin slides right into the lock, easing the bolt left with the slightest click. I should be at the dorm packing my dance bag with everything I'll need for opening night. I should be stretching my feet or soaking them in an ice bath in the physical therapy room. I should be mentally preparing myself for tonight and my heart for the long program. All the American Ballet Company ballet masters will be in the audience, hunting for new core talent. All the company dancers, off for the night, will be watching us dance their roles, judging us. And Mama and Dad will be in the front row with Aunt Leah, all taking deep, worried breaths when I step on stage. But there are a few hours before I have to officially worry about those things. So I push my way into the American Ballet Company shoe room on the third floor of our building. It's closed now for the night. We've all gotten what we needed for the show. The hallway is desolate and the lights are out. I slip inside, falling into the heavy scent of satin and rosin. It's my second time sneaking in here after hours. I never get enough time in this space. I'm never allowed to explore. I have to take the chance while I can. The shoes will be housed in our school building for only another month or so, then move to the new company building next door. Posters on the wall advertise different brands of point shoes. A counter window is a portal into the back storage room, where cubbies hold piles of stock point shoes and leather slippers, and, in labeled boxes, custom-made ones for company dancers. They entice, like delicate pink candy sealed in pastel wrappings. I lift myself over the counter and sneak into the back. I run my fingers over the different shoes and admire the names written under their sections. Shoes for each core girl. Shoes for each soloist. Shoes for each principal. It was a pair of point shoes that first made me want to be a ballerina. They were the first I'd ever seen, stuffed in a garbage can in downtown San Francisco. Pretty pink satin, stained brown by coffee grounds and trash. I'd reached in before Mama caught me, getting a hold of one shoe. I wanted to take it home, clean it, and keep it forever, but she wouldn't let me. After that, she bathed me in sanitizer and signed me up for a ballet class. She thought it would be light and easy, something a girl born with a heart defect could do without much threat of injury. But when I got serious, and the teacher said I was good, she wanted to pull me out. "It's too much stress," she'd said over the dinner table after I received my acceptance letter to the conservatory. "I love it," was my constant response. I sewed elastic on my point shoes, determined to have at least a dozen pairs ready before I left. "You could be hospitalized. One wrong move. One intense practice or performance. I'm not willing to lose you," she'd said, like she wanted to scoop me up in one of her summer canning jars, only to be stored in the pantry until winter. She'd cried when I told her I'd rather have 1 year dancing than a lifetime without it. She'd cried when my suitcases were packed and Dad drove me to the airport. She cried when I told her I didn't want her to come to New York to help me settle in. I pull out several principal dancers' shoes and slide my feet into them, even though I know they won't fit and that I shouldn't ruin someone else's brand new shoes. I don't stand on point. Just let myself feel what it might be like to wear these shoes, be like these women. And any worries I had about being at the conservatory and pushing through disappear. Half an hour before curtain, backstage is a frenzy of half-dressed girls and frazzled crew, trying to finalize everyone and everything. The nerves are zinging in my stomach, like my butterflies when they're startled. I can't believe it's finally here, the moment I've dreamed of all my life. I try to remember how calm I'd felt earlier. Tonight, I'll finally see my parents in the audience, show them why I had to go so far from them, show them that it was worth it. I slip to the edge of the stage, right where the thick velvet curtains will part in just minutes. I peer through a crack as the audience pours in, and that's when it hits me, the stage fright. My heart is racing. The adrenaline surges through me. I do the breathing exercises Mama taught me, but it's not working. I place two fingers on my wrist, trying to quiet my thoughts long enough to track my pulse. If I had been wearing that monitor, it would surely be shrieking now, drawing everyone's attention my way. I try to focus on counting. 68, 73, 84, 96. My heart rate climbing up and up and up, faster and faster, out of my control. I know that I'm pushing it, but how can I give up this moment? How can I march over to Morky before she takes her place in the audience and tell her I can't do it? That I'm feeling the warning signs. I can't not dance. Not now. Not when my feet have carried me this far. Breathe, Gigi, breathe. I count again, slowing down this time, really listening to the heartbeats. 57, 62, 78, 85. Breathing in and out, in and out. I feel my muscles relax. And then I startle, as arms circle my waist and hot breath hovers on my neck, sending goosebumps up my arms and my heart racing once again. "Alec," I say, turning so I'm fully embraced by his arms. I lean into him, breathing in his soapy scent. He's wearing his gold and red brocade nutcracker tunic and tights, the headpiece mask left in the wings. The heavy stage lights hit the gold of his hair, setting it ablaze, and there's something different in his eyes tonight, something that makes my heart race even faster. "Showtime," he says, his voice clear and warm in my ears. Even through the din of the crowd backstage, "I'm honored to be your partner." Leaning back onto one knee, he does a little bow, and I grin at him. "I'm glad to be your partner too," I say, extending my hand to lift him up. He kisses it as he rises, pulling me back into his arms. "And I'm hoping," he says, whispering now, even though we're so close, even though everyone else has fallen away, "that You might think I can be something more than just, you know, your paw partner. Is he asking what I think he's asking? The heat flushes through my cheeks and neck and chest, warming me from head to toe. I'm hoping, he says, his mouth hot on my ear, that you might be my girlfriend. He's nervous, which I've never seen before. And I look up into the ocean of his eyes and nod. He pulls a small box from inside his jacket, red and tiny, with a golden ribbon embracing it, like the presents under the Christmas tree on the far corner of the stage. I can't help but laugh as we both plop down on the floor in our resplendent costumes and I tear into the box. Backstage hands call for the 10-minute curtain warning for the second act, but we don't stop. Inside, nestled in white tissue paper, is a tiny rose charm, just the size of my pinky nail, made of gold, complete with a little stem and even thorns. For you, he says, for luck. And that's when he finally kisses me again. Minutes later, like in a dream, the music is playing and I'm waiting in the wings. Backstage is charged with tension. The other dancers tiptoe behind me, coming on and off stage in preparation for my entrance. My palms shake and tiny beads of sweat seep into my costume. I feel their eyes and their worries. Will I mess up? My muscles quiver. Thousands of other ballerinas from all over the world have worn this costume and danced this role. I hope I can dance the part as well as them. I fluff out the skirt, just as the costume mistress Madame Matvienko did. Alex Rose sits in the folds of plum-colored tulle. I sewed it into the lining of my costume. I haven't stopped twirling it between my thumb and forefinger. I dust my shoes and rosin one last time to make sure I don't fall. June passes by, ready to enter with the rest of the corps. I feel her eyes skate over me on her way on stage. She looks beautiful and willowy, and I wish we were closer. I wish we were close enough to hug each other. She gazes over at me. I nod at her, and she nods back. Break a leg, I mouth. You mean married? She flashes me a slight smile. I give her one back and turn away. I try to focus on nothing else but my performance. We've all worked for weeks on these roles, all day long, and just for 6 minutes on stage. 6 minutes to show the ballet masters what you've learned. Ballet must be picture perfect, because when you make a mistake, a trained eye can spot it. After ballet school, there are so few professional jobs. Famous companies already have their principals and soloists and may only have room for you in the corps, where you have to work through the ranks. You have to love it and dance your way up. For me, dance was just always about the flow, the movement, the passion. But now, I want to zip through the ranks. Being on stage makes it all worth it. I don't know what to do with my hands. I smooth the edges of my perfect bun, my curls blown out into sleek perfection. The jeweled tiara digs into my scalp. I try not to lick off my lipstick. I hear Morky in my head. If you are nervous in the wings, then you will have a great performance. The first time I was ever on stage, I was 6 and dancing a peasant child in Sleeping Beauty. I remember sleeping in my costume for days leading up to the show and obsessing over each little step. My old ballet teacher had said the difference between a good dancer and a true ballerina is that a ballerina must be perfect, like a doll come to life, made just for the stage. I will be a doll. I will be a fairy. I peek out from behind a curtain, but can't see anything beyond the stage. The audience is bathed in darkness, but I feel their eyes watching. I've never danced for this many people before. It feels strange to be dancing for more than 2,000 people. I shake out my arms and legs. The audience's applause hits me in waves. I hear a girl whisper my name, as if I don't know that this is it, the moment I finally take center stage. It's a party, and the Nutcracker Prince is introducing little Clara to all the wonders in the lands of sweets. And I am one of them. I will present myself to the audience and the other dancers. Large jewel-like lights bathe the stage. My music starts. Little droplets of sound fill the space. I listen to the chiming melody and feel the musical phrases. I want to dance on top of those notes. I smooth my costume and tiptoe on stage. The lights warm my skin, erasing my nerves. The tension disappears, and I've stepped onto a different plane, one where I am no longer Gigi, but the sugar plum fairy. I jump onto my toes. My feet sink with the music, and my body glides. As I throw myself into the motions, I don't see others anymore. I blend with the music and the movements. My arms are elegant lines of muscle over my head. I keep my head up, only watching my shadow to ensure I look perfect. I smile at the audience even though it's hard to breathe and sweat drips down my back. My solo ends. I curtsy and hear the roar of applause. I recognize Mama's whistle. I hold a grin and move to the side while Alec comes center stage. My chest heaves and I try to catch my breath without being seen. My heart is flailing, thumping in my chest like a bird caught in a cage, wanting to be wild again. We're supposed to be ethereal beings on stage, even through the most tiring variations, but now I'm spent. I double over, trying to find more oxygen. The tightness is cutting into my euphoria. The lack of air causes my muscles to twitch and spasm. I will my heart to slow, to calm. I want to enjoy this moment, not fight my own body. I breathe and count, breathe and count. And finally, the rhythm finds itself and slows. I'm still overwhelmed with emotion and fatigue and bliss. But I only have a few minutes until Alec presents his hand to me. We perform our pas, his hands holding me at every turn, supporting me during every lift. I feel the heat in his hands on my waist when he lifts me, experiencing his touch everywhere, my legs, my arms, my fingers, my toes. Like the way the warmth of a shower hits you all at once. When he lifts me, his long fingers move beneath my tutu. I try not to shiver. I bat my eyelashes at him and throw coy looks his way as we nail each gesture, making it look like we've been dancing together our whole lives. His clever hands anticipate my every move, and I fold easily into his arms without hesitation. And then it's over. The ballet ends, and the curtain goes up for bows. Each group of dancers taking their turn before the audience. Alec and I wait in the wings holding hands, my fingers knit into his, shaky from fatigue and excitement. "You ready for this?" he whispers. "Yes," I say again. I place my other hand on my chest, willing my heart to slow. My head feels light, and I try to hold on to everything going on around me. "You were perfect," he says, before pulling me back on the stage for our final bows. We shuffle across and everyone makes room for us. We are last to go to the front and present ourselves to the audience. We curtsy and bow, then turn to our ballet masters and do the same. They nod and clap and shout bravo. A tiny petit ra tiptoes out with a bouquet of flowers for me. I hug her and she squeezes my waist tight. The crowd thunders, their roars vibrating the stage. Everything blurs around me like I'm caught up in the currents of a tornado. Suddenly, Alec twirls me, making the audience clap even louder. I blush and smile with embarrassment. Then he pulls me into a kiss. The crowd erupts. I lose my grasp on the flowers, letting them fall onto the stage. His mouth is soft and wet. His tongue tastes like a chocolate mint. It's like the kiss we shared before, except this one isn't private. This is for the world to see, and I no longer have the spasm of worry about whether he might still be in love with Bette instead of me. I don't hear the crowd anymore. I don't hear the dancers around us. I hear my heart and his, and I feel that pulse race between my legs again. I fold into him and lose myself in that one perfect moment, knowing how very, very rare this kind of joy is.
Act 2. Spring Season. Spring Performance. Giselle. Cast. Major Soloist Parts. Giselle. Giselle Stewart. Giselle Understudy. Lee Jun Kim. Batilde. Bat Abney. Count Albrecht. Alec Lucas. Queen Myrda. Eleanor Alexander. Willis. Sophomore Corps de Ballet. Willis Soloist. Lee Jun Kim. Se-jin Kwan. Hilarion. Henri Dubois. Prince of Courland. William O'Reilly. Chapter 20. Bet. The spring cast list went up 24 hours ago, and I have taken exactly 5 pills since then, blowing through the last of the new ones I just got. I ignore the pills' side effects, my pounding heartbeat, the shakes in my hands, the dry mouth. I can deal, because I need them. Their odd mix of peace and razor-sharp focus. Mr. K put the cast up super early this year, the last week of January instead of mid-February, like usual. He says it so we have more time, but the whole thing is a mistake. And now, there's nothing to think about during rehearsal but the slow ruination of my life. But the pills did make me dance like the floor was fire, and I was the flame. Not that anyone is watching, of course. The Russians have stopped paying particular attention to me. Poof. Just like that after all these years. And Alec rubbed Gigi's shoulders the entire time, which I guess means they're officially together. Eleanor's no help. She just stretched and watched her body in the mirror, as if she'd never seen it before. Which maybe she hasn't in its new glory. She must have lost 5 pounds over winter break. And muscles have popped up in her legs that I don't think were there before. Winter break was a blur of disappointment for me, filled with endless hours of TV stupor and avoiding the calorie-laden crap my mother always fills the kitchen with. I worked out with Adele during the break at the gym with her trainer, and my mother paid one of my former ballet madams, pushed out of teaching at the conservatory by Mr. K, to come over every day. I'm shaking by the time ballet class is over, from the pills, or anger, or exhaustion, I can't tell which. I wave to Morky on the way out the door, but before she has a chance to acknowledge me, or comment on my precision or the 2 pounds I managed to drop during break, Gigi stops her and starts blathering away, and waving her hands around, like she's the one hopped up on some super speed elixir. Alec dashes out before I can talk to him. He doesn't wait like he used to. No one waits for me. Eleanor is off to a practice room, probably, but I can't stand the sight of myself in the mirror for one more second. I get paralyzed somewhere between Studio A and the elevators, and I lean against a wall to gather myself. I used to go to Alec's room after a long rehearsal, or watch movies with Eleanor, or research dance competitions and summer intensives, or imagine myself dancing the roles that I thought had been promised to me years ago. Now, none of that is an option. I unwind the ribbons on my point shoes and slide my feet out. I unwrap the tape and give each toe a little rub. They all ache from the pressure, the hours of work I've been putting in. My hands fumble with my empty locket, my thoughts tumbling down into a place filled with my worst nightmare. Being average, one of the core, a nobody. The chaos of the classes letting out can't compete with the trauma in my head, so I don't even notice Henri approach.
"We're going to rehearse together," Henri says.
He grabs my wrist, which hurts a little, and gives one quick tug. It yanks me right back to reality.
No, we aren't. I pull back, and the result is a hiccup of pain in my wrist. I could teach you a few things, he says, and goes for my wrist again, like he's been given permission to touch me. You should just get over it. Get over what? My black leotard sticks to my back and my stomach. My tights itch, my muscles burning underneath. I can't forget what he said to me, what he claims to know about the things I did to Cassie. Not being cast in the role you wanted? He says, like we're friends and he's sad for me. When Adele heard I got shafted again, she told me to just keep my head down, to keep working, keep looking for opportunities, that cast lists are whirlwinds that constantly change. My mother threatened to pull me out and send me to a rival ballet school, to get Mr. K fired, to take back the Abney endowment to the conservatory. But this time, I'm trying to just listen to Adele, the one who actually has exactly what I want. Come on, let's have a little fun. That's what's missing from your dancing, Omri says, crossing his arms in front of his chest and smiling. His dimples are deep dents in his face, and his biceps bulge when his arms cross. So for a minute, I let myself explore what Cassie found so attractive about him. He really looks like he does in all the dance magazines. Now that I've made room to see him. Now that Alec has disappeared. The last thing I'd ever want to do is go anywhere with you. I spit back, wondering if he's suddenly forgotten how I didn't speak a word to him during our PA rehearsals, passing messages through our sophomore understudies like some messed up version of the telephone game. I have to remind myself that I don't care how many magazine spreads or dancewear endorsements he's got. He's nothing. Even if he does know the one thing that could really ruin me. You shouldn't be so mean all the time, he says with that signature smirk, leaning closer. It isn't good for your looks, and you'll make even more enemies. I look through him like he's invisible, pretending that the words coming out of his mouth are just white noise, and walk ahead. Your attitude might inspire me to start telling people things about you, he says, his French accent thick with irritation. You don't know anything about me, I snap back. Oh, but I do. He points a finger at the hallway ceiling. Did you know there are cameras here? And, of course, in the studios? Even Studio B? A flush overwhelms my entire body, right down to my toes. A knot hardening in my stomach. Did you know that they record everything and can even pick up conversations? He says. I can feel the tears, hot and angry, ready to spill. I pivot carefully back around to face him, my face stone, not betraying a thing. What did you say? I seem to have finally gotten your attention, he says. You don't know anything, I say. I sound exactly the same as my mother did during arguments with my father. There are no cameras. I've been here, like, forever. Don't you think I'd know something like that? I say, though I'm not quite sure. There's a French place, Henri says. In the East Village. They let me have wine if I stay in the back. Owner knows my dad. It's nice. I'm not going anywhere with you. Oh, but you are. Because I'm someone who knows your little secrets. The types of things that could get you thrown out of school. Or, better yet, sent away. The kinds of things that will follow you and your family. Might even lead to a lawsuit. You don't know exactly what I'll do with the things I know, so I'm confident you'll meet me out front. He leaves me standing there in a blend of misery and aggression and confusion. Fine, I call out. But let me at least change. I like you like this, Henri says. But okay. I hate that last comment. I push away all the reasons why I get dressed and skip history class and lie to Eleanor about going to Adele's in order to leave with him. He's waiting in the school lobby, all dressed up with a smug look on his face, like he knew I'd show up. Like he knows exactly how to make me do what he wants. French food's too heavy, I say, carrying my coat, still unable to commit to leaving the building with him. What I really mean is that all food is too heavy lately. Celery, carrots, broth. All my standbys are making me ill. Catching sight of my reflection now in the foyer mirror, I'm sick to see my hips pushing out past my waistline, my cheeks fuller than usual. The lines of my body are all wrong in these regular clothes. I can't balloon to the size of a regular girl. The 2 pound loss didn't do enough. My little pills don't seem to be speeding me up, helping me focus, or keeping my weight down. Meanwhile, all I dream about or see when I close my eyes for longer than a blink is Gigi's lithe, lean body, twirling and leaping and finding its way into Alex's strong arms. 30 minutes later, we're in the back booth of the smallest French bistro in all Manhattan. Everything is red, the booths, the fringe on the lamps, the carpet, the wine, its stain on Henri's lips. His foot has found mine under the table, and while he downs steak, he keeps playing aggressive footsie with me. It's not happening, I say again. I don't know why you've dragged me here or what you think is going to happen. Play along at least, he says. I don't, and at first this makes him smirk and tease me and try grabbing my hand. But about halfway through the bottle of wine the waiters have been feeding him, it starts to piss him off. I just want to know whatever it is that he's figured out and be done with it. I'll find a way to discredit it all. Cassie is a crazy person now. Her injury pushed her over the edge. That's what I've heard. And no one believes those types. What? He says, a slur marring his accent. You don't like the restaurant? Cozy, no? Not my style, I say, sipping the wine even though it will stain my teeth. When you get a cute little freshman girlfriend, you can bring her here to seduce her. This finally shuts him up, and he finishes his steak pretty quickly. I don't touch the food on my plate, just stab it around with my fork, volleying the image of Gigi's face and Henri's eyes in my head. I don't have any more time to waste on you. If you really knew anything, you'd bring it up by now. The owner comes to the table, and they fire back and forth in French. With my meager childhood lessons, I can barely keep up. Henri turns in his chair, jumping deeper into the conversation. He doesn't bother introducing me, which is fine. I turn my attention to the couple sitting nearby, who fuss about their middle school son's math grades, when Henri's phone, face up on the table, starts to light up. I crane to peek. It's Will. He calls twice. Then a series of texts flood the screen. Lots of desperate, where are you, and do you want to play pool or watch TV later? They remind me of texts a lovesick girl sends to a crush. I try not to smile, and wonder if Henri is into both girls and boys. That wouldn't be a totally off-the-wall thing in the ballet world. But even better yet, Will has a new crush, and it's not Alec anymore. Henri ends his conversation too soon and snatches his phone from the table and my gaze. I'm going to the bathroom, then leaving, I announce, pulling on my coat. I don't actually care anymore. Say what you want. No one will believe you. I get up before he can respond. The bathrooms are in a nook in the back of the bistro, where they store aprons and high chairs and a sad, lonely-looking old payphone. I smooth the bun I kept my hair in and put on a fresh coat of my Dior red lipstick. He won't say anything, and no one will believe a word. After telling myself that a few times, I text my pill dealer, and tell him to meet me at the school building when he can. I'm not surprised to see Henri leaning against the wall when I come out of the ladies' room. He wraps an arm around my waist, his fingers stroking my side. I push at him. He grips me tighter, like he's going to lift me above his head, like we're in the studio practicing a pas. It tickles, and I wince away, but end up pushed farther into the corner, farther into the dark. "Don't think about trying your shit with me," I say, giving him a little shove. He pushes me back. "Get off me."
"How does it feel?" he says.
"How does what feel?" I look around for waiters or other customers who need to use the bathroom. It's like they've been told to stay out of the little dark nook.
"To be backed into a corner, like what you did with Cassie?"
"I didn't do anything to your precious girlfriend. We were friends." The lie is delivered perfectly. Conversation over. I try to step away again, with some amount of grace, but he just holds tighter, blocking me.
"Hey,"
I say, louder, more meanly.
"Back off."
"Oh, come on, Bet," he says instead, the whisper of his voice hitting my throat, feeling too much like someone's fingers strangling me.
"Don't be a bitch. Obviously, I know what you did to her."
I cut him off with a shove, not with my hands, which I can't access because of the way he's holding me, but using my whole body, slamming into his. The force of it must have been impressive, because he finally moves a little.
"Just shut up. I didn't do anything," I say.
I mirror his ugly whisper, my own voice making me shiver.
"You're making shit up. You're desperate."
I'm practically spitting on him now. For an instant, he made me feel small and powerless and scared in this corner. And now, I want to make him pay. The way he pawed at my skin, stepped in my way, manipulated me into coming down here in the first place, gets my heart pounding. But I'm Bet, and I won't let him make me forget that.
"You're not Cassie's hero, so stop trying to be."
I'm talking fast now. Too fast. I'm on fire. I think about what it would be like to tell Mr. K about Henri grabbing at me, forcing me into a dark corner and not letting go. No one would believe him then. For a delusional moment, I picture Mr. K pulling me to his chest and letting me cry on his perfectly pressed shirt. But then I remember, that's not who I am to him anymore. I probably couldn't even get a moment alone with him if I begged.
"I'm lying," he says, stretching out the word with his accent until it almost sounds funny.
"Get a life," I say, sliding past him.
"You had something to do with Will dropping her last spring," he says, before I'm two steps away from him. "She fractured her hip and is still recovering from that injury. But I bet that's what you were hoping for."
I freeze, trying to keep my face calm and expressionless. Did Will tell him? Would he do that? I pivot back around.
"And I bet you did all those other little stupid things to her, too."
His words have my heart plummeting into my empty stomach, a boulder in an empty well. Thud.
"I also have a theory, after being around you these past few months, seeing how you look at Gigi, how you operate."
He grabs me again, so close I can smell the wine on his breath.
"You made Will drop Cassie. She said the lift was perfect, and I plan to get proof."
I erase the word proof with a hard, disgusting, sloppy kiss. I shove my tongue into his mouth and let his into mine. I let it erase his accusations and whatever else he knows. I have to do what I can to protect myself. Maybe, if I give him just a little bit of me, he'll forget all about Cassie. I've come this far. I can't lose now.